Hey guys, what's going on? It's Matt here, your co-host from the Worship Town Guy podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, I want to take just a second to tell you about a couple things that we've got going on over in our Insiders group. Now, if you don't know about our Insiders group, then you are missing out. Starting the Insiders group was Johnny and I's solution to creating community for church techs all over the globe, and more specifically, fighting against isolation and burnout in the tech booth. We know how hard it can be as tech people sometimes, especially if you feel like you're under-supported or if you're on an island by yourself. We created the group to be the best place on the internet for church tech people just like you. So what happens in the group? Well, currently we have a thriving community full of church audio guys and girls just like you. We do weekly coaching calls where we all hop on and help each other. We talk about your struggles and help problem solve, and we inspire each other with creative solutions we found. We've got monthly guest coaches, and honestly, you never know who it's going to be. We've had friends come in from touring crews like Lauren Daigle and Charlie Puth. We've also had coaches on who've spent decades just building volunteer teams at churches all over the U.S. On top of all of this, insiders get 30% off all Worship Sound Guy products all the time, just for being a member of the group. But the best part is we have an ever-growing list of partners that have also agreed to give our insiders special discounts. So if you're a fan of companies like 64Audio or churchgear.com, you're definitely going to want to be an insider. All right, enough about that. If you want to get in on the fun, you can sign up today at worshipsoundguide.com/insiders. All right, let's jump into today's episode.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to the Worship Sound Guy podcast. It's me, your host, Johnny, alongside your other co-host, Matt.
What's up, guys?
And we are here live at Philo Conference. If you don't know what Philo Conference is, it is a fantastic, production technical church leader conference / trade show. We've got a lot of awesome vendors here as well, which we'll talk about in a bit. But yeah, we wanted to do like kind of a Philo recap and talk about some things we've learned, some insights and takeaways we have from the conference, because I think it's going to be really valuable for you to hear about this, especially if you didn't get to go to the conference or watch online. So it's day two of the conference, the final day, and we are literally like on the show floor recording this podcast. So apologies if you hear a little bit of background noise or whatever, people are walking by, but we want to get all this to you while it's fresh in our minds and just kind of let you in on what we've gotten to experience here. So, okay, Matt, what has been your favorite part of the conference so far?
Man, I think, this is both of our first times, but we have never been to a conference like this before. So I love what's going on. It feels very relaxed. Just getting to meet a lot of people, check out awesome gear. Honestly, messing around with expensive Digico consoles has been fun, you know. But I've loved all of the breakouts. This morning we went to the Gene Kim breakout. He was talking about mixing drums, tuning, miking, mixing, and it was all just so good. We got to watch him mix some tracks from the Phil Wickham tour. And honestly, yeah, I feel like there's been a lot of good reminders of like a lot of what Gene focuses on is like, man, just kind of back to basics, simple stuff. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's so many good reminders that it's really easy to get lost in the weeds of stuff and be really quick to throw a plug in on something. But just remembering like, man, if the tuning is right and you got the right mic positioned right and stuff is in phase, like you're 90% of the way there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. I think for me, my favorite part has actually just been like the community aspect of it. Like it's rare to, you know, be around thousands of other church techs. And it's a reminder of like how big the community is, but like also how small the community is in a way. I think they said like including online, like they have like representation from like 62 different countries, which
That's
is
awesome.
Just crazy to me. And it's like, yeah, it just reminds me of like how big the church is, like how many, you know, different circumstances, situations that we're all in. And yet we all have, you know, this unifying like faith and these things that we can kind of come together on as we all learn together and grow together. So I think it's been cool just like getting to meet people and just connect with different people in different walks.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. We've talked about this a little bit offline, but it seems like the whole church tech community is just becoming very, very open and collaborative. And I love that. Obviously that's a big heart of ours and doing this. And even with the like insiders group, that's kind of what we're trying to lean into. But I love like being here has just really felt like, man, we're all on the same team. We're all going after the same things. Let's help each other out, you know? Mm-hmm. It's been really, really cool.
Yeah, it's felt really collaborative. Whereas I think in past years, not saying at this conference or anything, but just like in the past, sometimes the production world can feel very kind of gatekeepy in a way of like, yeah. Ooh, I've got my secret techniques and my mix sounds better than all the other church mixes and I'm not going to share how I do it. It's like now,
competitive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which is like such a silly way for like, I mean, the body of Christ to act.
It's true.
So it feels very like antithetical to like how we should be treating each other.
Yeah. I think Philo has like leaned into that. Like obviously that's their heart. And so it's been really cool to be in our first year here. Obviously mm-hmm. Philo's been happening for years, mm-hmm. but just getting to kind of see that in action, you know, out like, there's been so many people that we met that we know from the insiders group or through Instagram. Mm-hmm. We've got to actually like meet them in person and hang out and have lunch. Like shout out to Jared. Like we finally got to meet and it's just been great connecting with everybody.
Yeah. Like people who we've been like, you know, they'll like DM us on Sunday and, you know, share a picture of their tech setup and we'll repost or whatever. Like, you know, been doing that, like, you know, being like digital friends for like years. And now it's like, oh, you're a real person. I get to meet you.
That's true. That's true. Dude. Cool. So this is also our first time here at Willow Creek Church.
Yeah.
We got to do a little tech tour yesterday.
We did.
What do you think about this place, dude?
Man, it's humongous. if you haven't been out here, their auditorium seats, like, I think there's like
7,200.
7,200. Yeah, that sounds about right. It is gigantic. The whole campus is really beautiful. They do have a really unique PA setup, which is something I haven't seen before. So it's a double hung Meyer PA. So I didn't get total confirmation if they're still doing this or not. But anyway, they have like on each side of the stage, there are two array hangs side by side. And the idea was that one of the arrays is for just like all the band and like instrumentation. And then the other one's hanging right next to it is for all the vocals and speaking. So it's like literally two separate PA systems to run the mix, which is definitely a choice. It's hard to say for sure, like obviously without knowing like all the complexities of like why they went that route, but it's something that I hadn't seen before. And it's definitely like a unique approach to things. Their production, like it's really, really good. Huge shout out to like the whole team here. We get to like go kind of tour everything. Like their broadcast area is insane. They're running all the Yamaha Rivage consoles. I was going to say like Rivage, Rivage. I don't know.
I've always said Rivage.
I think that's right. Someone from Yamaha, cooler, tell us, you know, how to pronounce it. same with Avantis. I'm like Avantis, Avantis. Like I don't know. Should probably figure that out. Anyway. So they're all on Yamaha consoles and I really do love like how standardized everything is. It's like from like room to room and console to console, it's all like very similar. So you can just like kind of jump in anywhere.
Yeah. It seems like they've got their systems really dialed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I think my favorite part was the automated blackout curtains in the auditorium.
Dude. Yeah. So they have these gigantic windows on the side of their main auditorium. And
it's
we're like,
on either
wow,
side of the stage. Right?
Yeah, yeah, he's like humongous, like three stories high, and we're like, wow, that's really bright. It's a bold move. And then as the lights are coming down, these like curtains, like shades, I guess, descended from the ceiling and like blacked out everything. So it was like, yeah, really cool way to like transform it from something very like outdoorsy and see all like, these like woods and like a water feature out the side. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it just comes down and everything is like all nice and dark.
Nice. Yeah. Seeing this campus has been really cool. Honestly, just getting to walk around. It's a beautiful, beautiful space. Mm-hmm. And also being out here in Chicago, the weather has been great.
Oh,
I feel like we got to put off the Atlanta heat for like one more week.
Dude, it's so true. I don't know what the humidity is right now, but it's way less than Atlanta. And yeah, it feels so nice out here.
It's great.
Yep. So, okay, we got to see a bunch of gear, which I know everybody wants to know about the gear. What's been like your favorite thing you've seen so far?
Man, there's been so much. There's two standouts. One, the new Digico Quantum 8 just looks so sick.
It's crazy.
It's unreal.
It's more console than any church is ever going to need. But it's true. It looks cool.
It looks great. The little, like their bank buttons are like this awesome touch screen that you can also like swipe to get to stuff. And right now it's like just between snapshots and banks, but I'm like, mm-hmm. I guarantee you they're going to update that and you can, I'm like, dude, let me look my plug my phone in and let me text on the console, you know?
Yeah, do like all the messaging and stuff. That would be so cool. It does have a camera built into it. So yeah,
it does have a camera, which I forgot. The SD7 also does.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But yeah, it does.
Yeah, so for anyone wondering why the heck there'd be a camera on a mixing console, it's because you can actually display a camera feed on the screen, so you can see like whoever's running, you know, monitors or whatever. I guess you really patch any video input mm-hmm. into it, so you can, like, see a stage view if you wanted to, or see, you know, the person who's running, you know, monitors or broadcast or whatever. So just one of those little extra features that makes it, you know, a fun console to run.
Make me shave on a Sunday now.
Yep, exactly.
Still gonna be looking at me and on camera.
Man, I would say mine, gosh, okay. There's a company called Sound Devices, which you might be familiar with. They make like field recorders and stuff. And I've seen those for a long time. Like, they're really known for like super high quality field recording stuff. And suddenly they have just changed the game for wireless.
Bro, it's nuts.
Yeah, there's, if it's not out already, there will be a social post about it really soon on our Instagram. But got to talk with their rep for a little bit. And so basically they've got this thing where it's like a one space rack unit that can do up to 32 channels of wireless, which is like, that's absurd. Like, I know like so many of us have got like this, you know, gigantic space of, you know, rack space mm-hmm. that's just dedicated to wireless. And this is like, nope, that's all in one little teeny tiny thing.
Dude, it looked so good.
Yeah. It's got like a web interface that can do like all your, you know, your coordination, all that kind of stuff, and frequency monitoring, everything's just like built right into it. It's pretty much like every time I'd be like, oh, what about a, and he's like, oh yeah, we thought of that. It's right here.
Yeah,
and
literally the feature set was insane.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really nuts. And it's got like a super wide tuning range on it. So you can go like all the way down from like UHF up to like, I think like 1.6 or 1.5 gigahertz. So it's like just an incredible spectrum to work with. So you very easily like get a lot of channels working around like a very like complex RF environment.
I really want to mess with it some, and I hope that they do in-ear soon too. Because if they had right now it's just wireless mm-hmm. transmitters.
Yeah.
But I mean, everything about it, I loved. They're kind of comparing themselves. It's kind of in the Shure Axient range of products. So it's a little more expensive, but not more expensive than Shure, but just it's on the upper end of the wireless mm-hmm. price. But it's like if you go Shure Axient and you want 32 channels, you're going to have a massive rack. You're also going to have to buy of your antenna and like network stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and this is literally all of that is built in to the unit.
Yeah, it is remarkable.
They've got like the OptiCore module so you can connect to Digico. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Like there's just so many little things. And not just that, they've got like Dante capability. They've got, I mean,
they had
so
Maddie
much.
On it. One really cool thing. They had like little like analog breakouts.
Oh, that's right.
That came off of Ethernet cables. So it's like, if you've seen like kind of the, like you can buy them on Amazon, but like the thing where it's like a Cat 6 to XLR like adapter thing. They had that. So it's like you can break out like four channels off a single like Cat 6 cable, which is really, really nice if you want to go analog out.
Everything you could possibly want. So be on the lookout for that. Sweet. Well, I know we posted yesterday to see if you guys had any questions. So John, if you want, we could take a little time to answer a couple of those.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's bring back the kind of the Ask Worship Sound Guy vibe for a minute here and just riff on some questions from y'all.
Okay, I'll read this one. This is from David Massey. Sorry if I'm saying that wrong.
That sounds right.
That sounds right. he's asking about
David Massey.
David is asking, what are the criteria for a separate broadcast console instead of AUX-fed from the front of house console?
Ooh, that's a great question. Matt, you want to take that one first?
Yeah, I think there's a great question. I think, if I could rephrase it slightly, I think it's kind of weighing the pros and cons of, hey, maybe when is it time to think about having like a dedicated broadcast setup versus just feeding it from front of house. And the cool thing is I actually, the church that I'm at now, when we came back to in-person services, we had that same conversation where we were trying to figure out, hey, are we going to do a broadcast kind of studio setup, a console, or are we going to just feed it from front of house? And we opted to go from front of house for a couple of reasons. One, obviously cost is a big part of that. You're buying another console, setting up, you know, studio space. Like obviously you need video routing in there, you need studio monitors, you need, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I think the biggest concern for me was actually being able to get three volunteers, you know, essentially front of house monitors and broadcast. And I think that's a need that a lot of people overlook potentially when they're building out a broadcast space is, even if you have all the gear, you're going to need another person to run that. I don't know about you guys, but for me, sometimes it's even just with front of house and monitors, it's a little tough to get it staffed every Sunday, you know?
Well, for us, we let musicians run off their, like an app to mix their ears.
Nice.
So we actually don't generally have a monitor engineer, like a dedicated one. So I'm like, man, the struggle will be real sometimes to, you know, to get three engineers potentially like on call every Sunday for that.
Yeah. So I feel like for me, that's one of the biggest considerations of like, if you're thinking about it, just figure if you already have a hard time staffing front of house, like that's going to be a whole nother thing you're going to have to staff. That's probably one of the biggest concerns.
My mind always goes to, okay, why are you doing this? Like what is going to be gained from a listener perspective or from a workflow for your team's perspective or like what you're trying to accomplish with it? I think you need to have like a good reason to want it to like make this shift. You know, if it's like, do you want better sound? Like, okay, that's a great motivation, but it's also like, okay, is there something that you're not doing now? Like from, you know, the feed from your front of house calls, like, would you benefit more maybe from like, you know, switching over to like a matrix fed system where you can like balance some like, you know, groups and stuff into that and get your online mix going that way. Rather than like, okay, we're just going to go all out and like switch over fully to a completely different workflow.
Yeah. I feel like one of the questions I always ask with any piece of new gear is like, can I honestly say that I am already getting everything that I possibly can out of what I currently have?
Yep.
So if there is still things that I could do at my front of house console to make my stream sound better, like I'm not going to go ask for another console before I can honestly say, hey, this is as good as our stream is going to get with what we have. So if leadership wants it to be better, like now we need to talk about, you know, having a dedicated operator, another broadcast setup. And I think that's the other thing is, which I think is what you were just touching on, is it has to be tied to the vision of the church. Like I think if as audio guys, like obviously who doesn't love a great studio setup, it's so much fun, but like, is that actually in line with the vision of the church and what your leadership is wanting to do? Because I mean, if you got 10 people watching on your live stream and you're trying to go spend, you know, 50 grand on a broadcast setup, like that just kind of doesn't add up. You know, the math doesn't math.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think too, it's like, you know, you don't want to do it the wrong way just to get it done.
Yeah.
That's something that I always come back to is like, you know, yes, you can go, you know, I've seen people go like, you know, it's like I'll get like an X32 rack and I'll run it off an iPad and I'll mix my broadcast that way. And it's like, you know, on headphones.
Hate your life.
And yes, you're getting a separate broadcast mix from like a technically a separate console, but it's like, it's going to be so much more of a hassle. And like, I'm not sure the results are going to justify even like that kind of expense. And just like, is it really necessary? Is it going to actually improve stuff rather than just like, okay, we can say we have a separate broadcast position now?
Yeah, it's true. And I honestly, like, I really don't believe that it's that hard to get a good live stream mix from a front of house console. Like, this is assuming your front of house mix sounds good.
Yeah.
Like if your front of house mix sounds bad, it's going to sound worse on the stream.
Yeah.
But like that was a decision we made is we said, hey, we could either, when we were deciding, we were coming back from, or when we were coming back to in-person services at the end of 2020, we were deciding like, hey, are we going to build this out? And we kind of thought, hey, if we actually invest this money into our front of house setup and making that the best it can be, then obviously our live stream sound is going to benefit from it. That will, but then also our front of house sound gets an upgrade. And so that's when we, you know, we had an X32 at front of house before that. That's when we bought our LV1 system. Mm-hmm. And that was the thought process behind it. It was like, hey, let's actually take this money and make front of house as good as it can be. Because if we do that, then honestly, the live stream will kind of sort itself out, you know? And I've just heard so many great live stream mixes that are either like matrixed out groups from front of house or just like the board mix with a couple small, you know, like it is doable.
Yeah, yeah, it absolutely is. And I think what you're hitting on there of like, yeah, how much the room mix impacts the live stream. I think people are like, oh, they're two separate things. And like, so in some ways they are, but it's also like, man, you're mixing in a bunch of room mics, probably, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
So yeah, so much of like the live stream sound is dependent on what your room actually sounds like. Because you've got microphones, they're, you know, even if it's just like the bleed into your, you know, drum mics and vocal mics and stuff, it's like you're hearing the sound of the room and the mix that's in the room, and then obviously mixing crowd mics and stage mics and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you're really like, your mix is being impacted more than you think it is by what's actually happening in room. So if you can get that dialed in, like odds are you're going to be able to do a lot more with your live stream.
Yeah.
And just as a teaser, we are going to be having some very cool resources for you very shortly to help you really dial in your live stream and to get a lot better at that without necessarily making like a tremendous investment like monetarily. So
yeah,
be on the lookout for that. You're going to love it.
Yeah. So David, hopefully that answers your question. I think to boil it down to the like criteria, which you specifically asked, I go, if you have enough staff or volunteers to do that and you can justify, you know, saying that like, hey, front of house, we've already done everything we can to make it as good as it can be. I think if you can check those boxes, then, you know, maybe at that point you could think about it as long as it's in line with the church's vision.
Mm-hmm.
But yep, that's exactly. Probably what I would say.
That's a great way to put it. What do we got next?
So Snowman Vocals 16.
Love that.
Says, how is the best way to teach sound to new sound techs who have zero experience?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, Okay, it's coming from a snowman. So I don't know the ear situation on Snowman. That could be very challenging. no, just kidding. Snowman 16. That's a great question. Okay. Well, I would say first off, not to just like, you know, toot our own horn, but we offer some great courses that will really, really help you with this. This is literally the reason why we started Worship Sound Guys, because we want to make sure that church audio techs had the resources and training that they need to be able to have a great sound every single Sunday. So if you're like trying to train your team or improve your own skills, you're, you know, a worship pastor, a tech director, whatever, like we are making these courses for you. It's the exact same like methodologies that we use to train our own teams. If you're looking to get started, Sound Guy Essentials is a great place to start. If you're on an X32, we have the X32 Masterclass. We have our Drums Masterclass. We have our EQ Secrets Masterclass if you're specifically interested in that. So those are all going to be fantastic places to start. And if you're looking for like a free option, we've got our EQ cheat sheet that you can go to worshipsoundguy.com and download that. And I guarantee if you're looking for like ways to just quickly make your mix better, the EQ cheat sheet is a great opportunity resource for that. Beyond that, it's practice, which obviously that's hard to do. Like I think sometimes, you know, we're in this, you know, catch 22 of like the only time we're behind the mixing board is when we are running sound, like in a, you know, an actual, you know, at least a rehearsal or, you know, in the middle of service. And that is not the time to practice. Like that's when you should have stuff dialed in and ready to go. So it's like, okay, well, how do you work around that? And for me, for you, I know like a lot of other people, we've all kind of landed on like using pre-recorded like multi-track recordings to sort of practice with. So if you're on a digital board, it's really, really easy to just hit record into some sort of digital audio software. Reaper is a good, basically free option. Persona Studio One is excellent as well. But maybe you already have like Pro Tools or, you know, Logic or whatever. Like just use one of those. Plug it up to your console, hit record, and track everything individually, unprocessed. And then just use the processing tools that are in that audio software. Like it's going to have like, you know, basic EQ, basic compression, effects, all that kind of stuff. You can download a trial of some Waves plugins if you want to mess around with that. So yeah, just get in there and start experimenting. Like that way you can make absurd EQ moves or, you know, try out crazy compression and effects and stuff that you just, you know, should never be able to get away with doing, you know, in the middle of a Sunday, or even like, you know, it'd be like distracting potentially during like a rehearsal. So you can get in there and try all that stuff and see what works and like see what you, you know, see what you learn from that.
Yeah. I was going to say, I actually feel like it's probably the easiest now than it ever has been to be able to practice mixing, like the amount of tools and stuff available. Like this is actually a question that came up yesterday in the other breakout that we went to with Gene Kim. He was talking about mixing vocals.
By the way, if you don't know Gene Kim, he's awesome here in sound for like Phil Wickham, Johnny Swim, a bunch of other artists. So he knows what he's doing.
You should go give him a follow.
Yeah.
And his Instagram is at TambourinePhil, I believe.
That's correct.
And we should have him on the podcast.
Yeah. Leave a review if you want to see Gene Kim on the podcast.
but yeah, he talked about this. And I mean, literally like, I think especially to someone who's brand new, like you need to know what an EQ does. You need to know what a compressor does and how it affects the sound. So there's like the knowledge part of it. But then you just need time to mess around and figure it out and hear the difference. And that's like, man, you can go download free multi-tracks. Either you can record your own would be ideal, but even if you don't have that, there are tons of places online that you can get them. You can get some from us, I believe.
Yeah, we give them away. Yeah, all of our courses come with it. All of our insiders have access to like a big library of just like random multi-track recordings that range from like very professional, like very pristine, like you could, you know, mix a live record off of them to like, you know, stuff we've recorded at camps that is, you know, like yeah. more challenging to work with, but yeah. they can teach you a lot about how stuff works.
So literally like download that, grab a free trial of Reaper or any kind of DAW, honestly, and just drop it in and put an EQ on it on the kick drum and start messing around.
Yeah,
start
just seeing what you see can what do. Happens. Yeah, figure out what different stuff sounds like. And then you yeah. can take that in on a Sunday morning and go, oh, I remember when I tried to do this, it sounded good. And then you can try that move live and, you know, hopefully you'll be several steps ahead in the process at that point
yeah.
of kind of knowing what works and what doesn't.
Yeah. The other thing that I'll say that I think is really, really big for beginners, it's big for all of us. Like it's important for everyone, but I think it's so important to listen to music and understand. Yeah. Like you don't have to be a musician, but I feel like there's a level of like, you need to enjoy music.
Yeah,
you need to be able to appreciate it. And I think that, I think it's kind of the thing of if you don't know what the target is, you're mm-hmm. not going to be able to hit it.
Yeah.
And so like in my mind, you know, whether that's, okay, we're trying to make it sound just like the record or we're trying to, like you have to know what a quote unquote good snare sounds like if you're ever going to make your snare sound good.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so yeah. I feel like, aside from the technical thing, like just start listening to worship music differently. Start paying attention. Like I remember, you know, back in the day I had someone that when I was learning would tell me like, hey, listen to the song and try to zero in on just, you know, pick one thing and try to track it throughout the whole song. So mm-hmm. like the snare drum and just listen. How does it sound on the verses? How does it sound on the choruses? How does it, you know, whatever that is, and just try to track it. And then do the same thing with like the electric guitar. Be like, okay, great. Listen to the tonal qualities and just get practice like listening to that one instrument in that entire song and just get your ear used to listening to music differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'll also really help you with your source tones too. Because yeah, if you really listen in, like snare drum is a great example of like, you're like, how are they tuning these drums? Like what does it sound like? How much like, you know, room or like overhead sound do you hear? And then you can set up your, you know, mics and your drum tuning and your, you know, work with your guitar players on guitar tone or whatever and kind of try to get closer to the tone that you actually want. That way you're not trying to fix everything in the mix. You're kind of be more aware of like, where does the tone start to get to the finished product that you're interested in?
Yeah, that's true. That's where I would say to start.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's really good. All right. Another question from our friend, David Massey. Is a triple digit dB too loud at 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning?
Yes.
But it's next fine question. At 9:05.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Once you're past 9, you're good. okay, there are a lot of whatabouts here. So the first thing I'm going to question is like, if you're actually running triple digits, that's like you're getting close to like a pretty uncomfortable mixing volume there. So my question is, how is your meter calibrated? Is it on A weighting or C weighting? Is it slow response? Is it fast response? Are you like standing in front of a speaker when you're measuring this, or are you at front of house? I think you have to kind of standardize those things before you can really make a meaningful judgment on like what is or is not too loud. Also, how big is your room? Like where are your speakers set up? Like what? Yeah, there's so many things that go into like, is it too loud? Is it not? So for me, when I talk about how loud something is in terms of a decibel level, I'm talking about A weighting slow at front of house. And so that's going to be a bit different depending on the coverage of your system from like what you might get if you walked, you know, all the way down to the front or like stood right near wherever your speakers or like arrays were hung or whatever. So I think there's a lot of variation that potentially might be happening there that's getting you that reading. I think the big thing though is, yeah, figure out some sort of standardization on your weighting and your response time. And that's going to like, I'd be a little surprised. I don't know if you're getting in triple digits, like on a normal Sunday.
Not on a normal Sunday, no. There have been a couple where, like, in the biggest moment of the third song and the room's engaged, like, yeah, we'll hit 100, 101 yeah. in, mm-hmm. like, for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
it's brief.
I don't think anyone wants to be greeted at 9 in the morning with 100 dB or up.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty safe, like, even, like, I mean, you zoom out a little bit and, like, the scope of a whole morning, like, I'm always trying to think of that, like, people are walking in from their cars, from outside, like sounds of nature, and they're mm-hmm. going to walk in and be like slapped in the face with a snare drum, song one. You know, like if anything, like even if you get to 100 dB later, but like that's not a goal or anything. That's just...
Yeah, that's a if the moment calls for it and if it's really actually necessary. One time I was attending another church and it was, yeah, like the very beginning of the set, so first thing that anyone's really hearing out of the PA system, besides like some pre-service music. And it's this big, it was a big like, drummer did like a kick, floor tom, you know, just like boosh, to like start the song. And I literally saw a lady jump. It was so funny. And yeah, to reiterate, I was not running sound at this. I did not do that. But yeah, I just like, man, I think if that is the reaction you're seeing out of people, like keep an eye on like, are people engaging with it? Like, you know,
yeah.
like if you're seeing somebody like plug their ears or something, like you might want to evaluate. You know, not to say that, you know, maybe that person's extra sensitive to volume or
say if you
know, whatever.
Like one person plugging in their ears, you might be okay. But yeah. if you're getting a lot of negative body language like that, you might want to,
yeah, if you notice like some trends like that, I think that's important to, you know, I'll use the word experiment, but, you know, to try to kind of test like based on, you know, like the age of your population or your congregation and like what kind of music they're normally listening to, like what are they comfortable with and kind of work from there.
Yeah.
Not to say you're just trying to make them comfortable, but I think it's, you know, a good starting point to kind of like feel out what their limits are,
yeah,
and work within that. Cause you're like, at the end of the day, you're serving your congregation. You're not trying to like put on the biggest, baddest, loudest rock show that you can. Like that's not the goal. Like
no
we're
one
in the
is there
service
to listen
industry.
To your mix.
Yeah, exactly.
No one's there for you.
Exactly.
with that said, Johnny, what's like your, do you have like a dB range that you kind of coach volunteers? Like, hey, mm-hmm. just like a loose, what do you do?
I do. We're pretty tight on dynamics. We have like a pretty controlled mix and I've worked really hard to get that. And I like the sound of that. I like how controllable it is. So we are right in like the like 91 to 94 range. And we like, even at like the biggest moments, we're like we're kind of sticking within that. And I will say this though, that arguably the most important fader on your console is your master fader.
Yeah.
I think like what you can do with like building moments and like the difference between how like, you know, 90, 91 dB feels compared to 94, like that's a big
massive,
difference,
yeah.
huge difference, especially if like the dynamics of your mix are fairly controlled. And so by just manipulating that master fader, like I'll go down to like, you know, -3 or something like as, you know, a song kind of starts and then like as it builds, I'm, you know, coming up more towards unity. And like the difference in that is just like the way you can build a song based off of that is really incredible. You can work with the band to enhance those dynamics.
Yeah. I think it's funny sometimes like this kind of counterintuitive, maybe it's not, but like I feel like some of the volunteers that I have trained, they're almost like scared of the PA. And so like, you know, it's running at like, you know, maybe mid to low 80s. And they're like, hey, like, you know, what do you think? How does it sound? And honestly, it's like a decent mix, but like, it's one of those where it's like, you know, you're kind of hearing, you know, like 50-50 drums coming through the PA slash mm-hmm. just coming from the stage. And so I'll just take the master and bump it up 3 or 4 dB until we're hitting like 90. And
yeah.
all of a sudden I'm like, hey, it sounds great. It just needed to be louder.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, like, doesn't this feel better? Up. Like, yeah, when it actually yeah. like kind of like,
it really does. Like if anything, way. Like if you're struggling a little bit, like I'm not saying just like turning it up is always the fix, but you know, sometimes you're just like, yeah, like I've actually had to coach some of our volunteers around, like we live between like 85 and 95 is
okay.
where, you know, the kind of like, and in the bigger moments, like it depends on the band and the arrangements and even like the keys we're doing it in, you know, if like guitar lines are sitting higher than normal because we had to change the key,
mm-hmm.
then like sometimes stuff will get a little, you know, shrill. But anyway, all that say, like, a lot of times, even at the down moments, I'm like, hey, I want this to be, this needs to still be immersive. I don't want it to feel like the PA's off and there's like a piano in a corner playing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a bad vibe most of the time.
So I almost feel like there's, and to your point, I think there's a lot to be said for dynamics and like the difference. And when we say dynamics, we're talking about like the difference between the softest part of the music and the loudest part. And so, like, Johnny, like you said, you took a lot of time to kind of shrink that gap to make sure that there's no, like, massive dynamic swings. Because if you're doing a down chorus at 79 dB and then the drums come in and you jump to 90 dB, it's going to seem so loud.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, abrasive. Whereas, like, no, 90 dB is actually probably, like, a really comfortable spot. Mm-hmm. But because you condition people to like 79 dB on a verse, now it's like, oh, that's too loud.
Yeah, yeah. And like to put that in perspective too, like actually Gene Kim was talking about like the differences in dynamics like in like pop music. And you know, you might have like, you know, like in a mastered pop song, like you might have less than a dB of variation throughout the entire song, like going from, you know, verses to choruses, you know, getting small, getting big, but it's all happening within like an overall like a dB. And so like in the live world, we're operating in a much wider space than that. But I think at the same time, it can be a valuable thing to like at least be able to control those things. And then you can control the dynamics rather than letting the dynamics control you.
That'll preach.
There you
go. That's good. Well, I think that's most of the questions we have time to get through.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to head into a lunch and learn with our friends from DMB.
Yeah, shout out DMB. They've been awesome to us on this trip.
Zach Brady's going to talk to us about some stuff.
And yeah.
We're going to go eat some Chick-fil-A and see what we can learn.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Well, you guys, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to take a moment to rate and review the podcast. If you learned something, tell us about it. Tell us what you want to see, any guests you'd want to see on the podcast or here on the podcast, and share it with somebody. That really helps get the podcast out to people, and it means a lot to us. We love being able to connect with everyone through this and want to share it with the world. So thank you so much for listening. Until next time, happy mixing.